Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say Start Here, located in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Just click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. If you do that and press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I can then turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. If, on the other hand, you would like to get to us without calling directly or live in the show, or if you're listening through the archives, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question or testimonial from you, we'll address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And we are very grateful whenever anybody chooses to do that, because it makes it so much easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service. And that's just a lot easier to do when we know how things are landing for people. I had occasion over the past few days to listen back to the archives of various shows, and I want to highlight what a valuable resource that is, this 13 plus years of internet shows that have been running. The first 8 years, it was 1 hour a day, 5 days a week. And now for the last five, it's been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. And those archives are available through the whyagain.org website, and some of the highlight shows that people have asked for have been curated out and put on the first hour anyway, has been put on the mindshiftersacademy.org website. So feel free to explore there, whether it's the audio file, audio library page, or the best of page, or the page that's got the Way of Mastery with commentary from 2022. And it's I don't really have words for how wonderful it is to be able to go back and access either some of the interviews we've done with people like Pierre Pratervand and Guy Finley, or some of the shows where I've read from the writings from Krishnamurti or Guy Finley or Diedrich Wolzak or a host of others. And I'm happy to be able to say that we're still making that available as a resource. And there are times when I make backups, physical backups on a detachable hard drive for some of those files, just in case something goes awry in the cloud, because some of those audio files are things I want to have access to for years to come. So if you've got a special, you've got a favorite show that from the past and it's not highlighted in one of those areas on MindShiftersAcademy.org website, or if it's not selected out on the whyagain.org page as a special show, please let us know. Send us an email or give us a call and let us know what particular day that was and what was in that show, and we'll make it a highlight show or separate it out, curate it out so that it's easier to find. And when we left off yesterday, just before we move on the show, I just want to remind people that today is a Tuesday, so that means there will be a support group tonight. Most Tuesdays and Thursday nights from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And all the information you would need to join us absolutely free is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And I'll also say that even if I'm in the middle of reading something from the Way of Mastery or some other source, please feel free to call in and press 1 on the phone and let me know that you've got a comment or a question, because that makes these shows far more relevant whenever that happens. So yesterday we were reading about something we'll get to in a minute. Area code 610, is this Susan?
Hi, Dr. Tim. Thanks for saying we can call in anytime. I know that's true, but it's sometimes hard to interrupt when you're on a roll, when you get on rolls. I wanted to ask you, did you recommend this book called The Laughing Jesus? Does that ring a bell?
Did I recommend it?
Yeah,
I think that title is by Timothy Freke and Peter Gandy.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I have read it and we've talked about it. I don't know that I said go out and get it. Why do you ask?
Well, I'm reading it, and I'm just mind blown. I really would like to give this book to the new rector of our church. I don't think it would dissuade him from the good things that are offered in organized religion, but it summarizes the atrocities in a really mind-blowing way. I'm not very far into the book, and I notice at the end he gives, or the two of them suggest various meditations, but I'm not there to even talk about that, but I couldn't remember who had mentioned it. It was you, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So the series of books by Timothy Freke and Peter Gandy have been eye-opening for me for a lot of years, probably back to about maybe 2012. I think it was probably in that second year that we were doing this internet show that Dale Ellen Hoffman came on and talked about that. That series of books, there's Elaine Pagels and Timothy Freke and Peter Gandy and a host of other people that write about the histories of religion and Christianity. And they're not writing mm-hmm. as Catholics or as Christians or as Protestants. They're writing as historians and researchers. And so that opened a whole universe of knowledge to me. And I had, even before that, as we have talked about over the years, I have been stretching from what I was raised in as a Catholic for a lot of years.
Yeah.
But this just added a whole new level of academic research to whatever I had been exposed to before.
I've never been interested in... In history and getting things straight, but when September 11th took place, I thought, there's a reason for this. We asked for this. But I didn't ever really do much research to find out what we had done to inspire such an attack. And they don't go into it in great detail, but it's almost as if you look at a chronological map or something and you can see what inspired this, that inspired that, and what we did about that, and I've got to go back and read it again because it was just like being on a roller coaster. And I do appreciate how he talks about fundamentalists and literalists and how they're present in every religion. And when they are present in every religion, people are in trouble because it's not loving or creative. It departs from the message of the founders of the religions. The Quran, well, I haven't read the Quran except in places to understand refugees. And I have a friend who's doing Ramadan right now and to understand that. But I find it just a wake-up call book. And it doesn't invite me particularly at all to go away from my church because I feel as if my church is, even the Passion Gospels that were spoken through the end last days of Holy Week, they are so divisive in their original translations. Not original, I don't know what the original ones, but the ones we use, filled with things like "for fear of the Jews" and so forth. And my rector went through all of those and edited out those things, not to falsify them, but to make them more truthful.
To detoxify them, right.
Yeah, detoxify them. And For instance, for fear of the Jews, he replaced for fear of the religious authorities, whoever they were. And if it was the Romans who were doing something rather than the Jews, he would make sure that was mentioned instead. And it was remarkable, not only remarkable, but a beautiful job of, it was poetic. I think he ought to publish it. He ought to send it around. This is the kind of thing that will defang the dark side of religions, and we don't have to throw them out, throw out religions. We just have to clean them up. So anyway, this book speaks to all of that, and I'm liking it. Well, not great bedtime reading, but that's when I usually read, is right before bed, and holy mackerel. They say, be careful what you put in your mind before you fall asleep. I'm not being very careful about that. But anyway, thanks for introducing that book. So you've known about it for a long time.
Yeah, it's one of four or five books that I've read by Timothy Freke and or Peter Gandy. They aren't all co-authors on all of them, but
right.
Timothy Freke has done some of his own stuff, too. And they've been a delight to me because they offer different options. They're not trying to tell you what to believe, but they are presenting large bibliographies so you can see what was their source material. You can go look up these things for yourself and see how they came to the conclusions that they're offering or the questions that they're proffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, we've had people over the years who come to the support groups and they're coming fresh from their solid religious background, whatever that specific religious background is, often being told that the stuff we're offering in the support groups is devil spawn and blasphemy.
Oh, wow.
And that if they keep listening to stuff like that or reading stuff like that, they're gonna burn in hell, etc. And I've had people ask me, it's happened on a number of occasions over the past, it's almost 20 years now, it'll be 20 years in August that we've been running the Tuesday group, and I've had people ask me, aren't you afraid that you're going to burn in hell? Aren't you afraid of the wrath of God? Don't you have any fear of our God? And I say as gently as I can, sometimes with a chuckle, no, I'm not afraid of the wrath of a God, and I have my reasons for that, just as you have your reasons for being afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
What I come to most often in that is I don't know, right? And that's what the Way of Mastery is calling us to say, just to understand how little we know. So I'm not trying to tell them they're wrong. I'm just telling them this is what the teaching that we're reading and studying and applying in our lives talks about. I'm not telling you this is right and yours is wrong. I'm just saying this is what I have found to be most useful for me, and this is the body of work that we talk about on the internet show and in the support groups.
Right. Well, I have two good friends. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you have two good friends.
I have two good friends who have left organized religion and now call themselves agnostic or atheist. But I don't find them to be anything like what in my younger years I might have thought an atheist would be, somebody who was, not interested in the greatest of what religion, good faith would offer, a loving God who would not create burning in hell forever, for instance. They've left it totally, and what I feel badly for both of them, because they're missing out on the good parts both of them are fairly solitary people now, and they don't have a community. You know, when you're a young parent and you've got little kids, you automatically have a community of lots of parents who are watching out for young kids, and there's a whole neighborhood or you have access. But as we get older and the kids go away or we might move, access to other people and a loving community, well, the radio show offers that, actually. But churches, if they're really good, are great for that. And usually they have a lot of outreach way beyond, like our refugee center. They don't teach Christianity in there, per se. They don't mention religion. They just try to teach people English and feed them and prepare their little kids for school. And there's a lot of that sort of good thing being done in some churches, probably many, many churches. So, and a book like this, scary as it is, doesn't disinvite us, to my mind, doesn't disinvite us to check out churches.
And so,
at all.
I'm struck by how you're saying that book is scary. What do you mean by that book? As scary as it is, how are you generating fear in reading that book? Is my question.
Well, just for instance, I wish I had it. I've got the book here. I wonder if I could find where I'm remembering. Give me a second, and I might. No, I don't know if I didn't mark it. Well, what led up to 9/11? To have a good look at that. I shouldn't use the word scary. It was sobering. It was logical. Made sense. The fundamentalist, fanatical belief that this team of worshippers of Allah were going to be awarded with, what was the phrase they used, women whose breasts stood up or something like that. I had to laugh, but they're picturing this very juicy heavenly life with lots of earthly type lusty rewards and things like that, but they really thought they were earning that by bashing the Twin Towers and also paying us back for whatever bad acting we'd done. It was scary. Let's face it, it was scary. But it made sense.
Every religion has its own beliefs like that.
I know. He's saying that.
And every religion makes fun of every other religion's beliefs. This is why at one mm-hmm. point in time I said, then this is a quote, I think, from Joseph Campbell. And he says, what's a good definition for a myth? Other people's religion.
Oh, boy.
And what is what's a good definition of a religion? A misunderstood myth.
I don't know what to do with that. You've got
a myth. What if a myth is not this falsehood, right? It's just it's a way to tell a story of deep fundamental truths at multiple layers of depth and breadth that simply can't be contained in a simple literal phrase or paragraph or story.
Right.
So a myth is not, you know, just a lie that you tell kids. The original meaning for myth is it's a way to communicate like a parable at multiple levels, deep truths. So what if a religion is a misunderstood myth? Is a myth
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's been turned into something literal. and simplified and dumbed down and rigidified.
Thanks. That's a good job. I get it.
That's what Joseph Campbell was talking about. He says, look, you know, there's these myths that cut across centuries and cultures, and they're the same. And they're all talking about different stories that if you turn them into a literal story, it seems bizarre. But when you understand the symbolism and the depth of the teaching, it is rich and varied and animated. And so it's a good way to introduce younger students to the truths, and the older students who study it and know that it's not meant to be literal can find endless usefulness and depth in the story.
Good.
And then, you know, he says, what's a good definition for the word myth? It is other people's religion. So that's what people do when they think, I've got the truth.
Yeah.
I've got the one truth. We have the one truth. If you believe what we believe, then you're right. And if you don't believe what we believe, you're wacky.
Yeah.
Or you're going to hell or whatever.
Well, it's a funny world, because if somebody asks me to fill out what my religion is, or if somebody asks me, it's very hard to answer. I could say I'm an Episcopalian. I usually say I'm a Universalist Episcopalian agnostic or some crazy thing. A common...
Well, at some point, I have to wonder why you would want to label yourself at all. But especially when you've...
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but why answer? Say, why do you ask? You know, or what's to you? Or what specifically do you want to know that I could help you with? Or, you know...
All right.
Rather than
I could do that.
Rather than pegging yourself into this definition of some series of words... Because no matter how many words you add in that string, it doesn't accurately depict you.
Yeah, I left out the mystic already.
Right, because the truth of you is that you're living and growing, and you know you're not the same this year as you were last, and you probably won't be the same next year as you are this year. So it's just a question, and somebody's in the chat room and says they watched the story of Bishop Carlton Bishop. I don't know if that's a misprint or if that's the person's name, and the story of his megachurch who could not hear his message of Jesus' salvation for the whole world rather than just those who say they are believers. And then... this is Joan in the chat room, and she says, agnostic has to do with knowing, atheist has to do with believing, I think. Well, the term agnostic refers to someone who doesn't know, who says, I don't know.
Yeah.
And the atheist is somebody who says, I do not believe in God.
Yeah.
And so Joan clarified this was Bishop Carlton Pearson, P-E-A-R-S-O-N. And that might be the person that I've talked about before who was head of one of these mega churches, and he was sitting there when you know, hell, fire, and brimstone, and if you believe what we believe, you're saved, and if you're not baptized in our church, you're dying and you're going to hell forever. And so he was sitting there one night watching the television, and I think he said he had his grandbaby on his knee. It might have been his own child, but I think it was a grandbaby. And he was watching, and on TV came one of these ads for, you know, Save the Starving Children, and the pictures of the little babies with flies in their nostrils, and they're, you know, basically just skin and bones. And he said, I just, you know, he's basically saying out loud in prayer to God, I can't believe you would do this to your children. And he got this full force knowing answer that said, I'm not doing that to anybody.
Right.
That's humans who have done that. And he got this full download about the true love of life or God or whatever, and how God would never hurt one of God's own children. And, you know, basically he got the download. You think you love this baby that's on your lap? How much more do you think, you know, that I would love my children? How much less do you think I could love any of my children? And so from that full force realization, he was now at an existential crisis in his life. He can't get up on the podium and start talking about, you know, everybody who doesn't believe, everybody who hasn't been saved is going to burn in hell, because he'd just gotten this full force realization that there is no hell, that God is not sending his or her or its children to hell to burn forever. Mm. And so eventually he ended up coming out, you might say, telling the other minister, because this church had grown to be so big there were all kinds of other ministers. It's a church that he started,
right.
But
yeah,
you know, it's a church of a church of personality, right? It's a church that grows up around somebody who's a really good speaker and motivates people and yay, rah, and all this good stuff. And so he finally came out, and they basically just stole the church from him. Jones says he was mentored by Oral Roberts. Pardon me?
Oh, maybe he wanted to give it up by then.
No, he didn't want to give it up. He wanted to keep preaching the gospel that he was getting informed to, that God loves everybody. Jesus loves everybody. You know, Jesus came to save the world, blah, blah, blah. But not just the people that say, I believe in Jesus, but red, yellow, black, white, whatever. Humans are humans, and God loves everybody. And so they basically kicked him out of his own church.
Yeah,
and, of course, then he has all of a sudden has no income, and his whole family's affected, et cetera. But, you know, that's what we do, right? We talk about love, and in the name of love, we do all kinds of violence and damage to people.
Totally, yeah.
And Joan had mentioned that he was mentored by Oral Roberts. And you know, Oral Roberts, a big name, a big evangelist and televangelist. And so, you know, it's that's another whole story. I mean, when people are out there raising money for their church, I just, you know, it's like, there are times when people ask me, why don't you sell vitamins that you know help people? Why don't you sell your book to your patients? Why don't you sell? And I just, to me, the way I was taught about this, the way it seems clean to me, these dual relationships are very difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
And it's a very slippery slope for me to be seen as an authority figure and then to sell somebody something.
Right.
If I'm making any profit from what I'm selling them, it's a very slippery slope for me. And so I have always opted in my career to refuse to do that, even though I have had you know, different products that I felt were very beneficial to me, et cetera. But I refuse to sell them to my patients. Now, sometimes people say, well, you know, this is a great thing and this could help your patients and they wouldn't have to take medication. And I say, that's absolutely true for some of my patients. And if they want to buy this stuff, they can go buy it directly from you. No, you've got to let me make you a distributor, because then you can make money. And I refuse to do it. And I just simply have refused for my entire career.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's similar to what I find in the churches and what they're doing, and the people who are raising money in these television evangelical things,
right,
and their tax exempt status and their private jets and.
Gross.
And the way they use fear. I mean, we've had politicians recently that are using the earthquake in New York and the eclipse that happened yesterday to promote fear.
Right.
And I just happen to find that my life is better when I see fear as false. And I understand that if I have a negative thought or a negative emotion active in my system, negative thought about myself or somebody else, or a negative emotion active in my system, I can instantly know three things. This is in the bottom line observations, which, by the way, you can buy off my website. Just kidding, it's free. the bottom line observations, and it says, if I have a negative thought or a negative emotion, I can instantly know three things. Number one, it's either a lie or based on a falsehood. Number two, it is an old tape playing in my brain. It's not about the present moment situation. And the third thing I can instantly know when I have a negative thought or emotion going is, if I sit and spin thinking about it, if I choose to speak or act from it, I'm just going to make my life situation worse, not better. It can't possibly improve my life to act from those negative emotions and thoughts. That would be just like throwing garbage on the buffet table right before dinner. It does not enhance the dining experience.
I love that phrase, the dining experience. That's a whole new thing. Yeah, I understand. You just explained something to me that happened the other day, and I'm sort of getting into dangerous waters by bringing this up. But when I was telling you how much I appreciated your guidance to Celinda when you were putting her through her wake-up sheet, and you were really deflecting and refusing to accept what I thought was a legitimate compliment, and now maybe you were thinking that I was making some kind of an idol out of you or something like that. There was something fishy about the whole thing. I did a mental wake-up sheet on it because I was feeling like a slime ball afterwards. I thought, what was the matter with what I was saying? Was it that bad? I mean, are my feelings that off?
Go ahead. So what happened?
What
was your mental wake-up sheet?
So I said, well, I, Sue, who am love, am feeling like a slime ball, like somehow unclean, sleazy, bad person for paying a compliment to Dr. Tim when he kept deflecting it and saying, no, it's the person's willingness that does it. And I'm saying, that's true, but it's also true that the guidance you gave her was really good. And I would like to be as adept at that when I'm helping a person do a wake-up sheet. But you were just slapping it away, and I took a few slaps, and then I backed off, and I left it alone, and I came away from the radio show and thought, well, that's it. I'm not going to talk on the radio show ever again. Tim is asking
No, wait a minute. You came away from the radio show saying you're not going to talk what?
I'm not going to talk anymore on the radio show.
Oh, in general, at all. Okay.
In general.
I thought you were saying it's something specific.
No. I mean, how long did that last? I think I called in at the very next show. So anyway, because I did my work, and I decided that was your garbage, not mine. Well, mine too, but I mean, for different reasons.
Or it's not garbage at all.
Okay. How so?
Well, because it's okay for you to think that it's important to compliment the person who's doing the facilitating. That's okay. And it's okay for me to think that's that's missing the mark and missing giving credit where credit is due to the person who's willing to do the work. And it's
Why
okay.
Why does it have to be either or? It's not either
that's right.
or at all.
That's right. There you go. So, see, you're agreeing with me.
No, I'm not. You were.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You could have said.
It's like the Monty Python. You paid for a 5-minute argument. No, I didn't. Yes, you did.
Well, you could have said something
I accept the
compliment. However, I want to point out that Celinda's willingness was really the key thing here. I would have been fine with that. But you were accepting it at all.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is just the point I'm trying to make. All right? It doesn't mean I'm right or wrong. It just means this is what's important for me, and it's the message I want to get out there far more than the misdirection of shining a spotlight on the facilitator. I want people to understand that if they choose to call this internet show, at least in my hour, I'm clearly not, you know, Michael agrees more with you on this than me, but in my hour, if they call the show, they're the star. If they're willing to do their work, that's the only really important thing. Michael could facilitate them, you could facilitate them, Jeannie could facilitate them, as long as whoever's doing the facilitating just stays at the basics and just keeps saying, what do you get now? Take a breath, soften. Notice that when you're mm-hmm. coming from love, that's what's true. That's all a facilitator has to do. And then the person who's willing to look at the whatever the parts of their mind are that hold material that they've generated fear about, that's what's needed. That's what's to be applauded. Because that's the only thing that's going to actually lead to growth and integration. That's my point. And a facilitator can be a facilitator can be a facilitator. But that's why I spend so much of my time, intelligence, money, and energy promoting this work, because you don't have to have a doctorate in clinical psychology. All you got to do is be willing to keep doing the worksheets. All you got to keep doing is canceling your need to be right. Cancel it, like the Way of Mastery calls us to, cancel every need you have to be special in any way. I know, maybe you don't remember that part of the Way of Mastery, but but it's one of the core teachings that will take your work to the next level, because then you get to see your ego for what it is and see it as just a very simple tool and not let it take any sense of priority.
This is very frustrating to me because I agree with everything you're saying. However, well, I'll give you an example. Today, a man who's trying, I was with the refugees and I do the snacks and I put out coffee and I put out whatever, you know, lots of fruit and whatever I can. And then I clean up afterwards and I do this. And I just do this. And a man came up to the kitchen door. He's not allowed in anymore. They have rules. He said, in the best English he could muster, he thanked me for feeding him. He's from Haiti. And he thanked me, and I thought, I could say, oh, well, it's nothing. You know, it's just my job, and go away. But I thanked him for thanking me. That wasn't hard. It wasn't a big ego trip at all. But I thought it would be nice to appreciate him for appreciating me. And it was seemed like a happy transaction, and then he went away. That's what I picture should have happened on that radio show, and it didn't happen, Dr. King.
Oh, the tangled web we weave when we dive into the shoulds. How muddy we get ourselves
quiet.
Diving into shoulds.
Dr. Tim did
it wrong. So he did the right thing when he was talking to Celinda, and he did the wrong thing when he was talking to me.
All right, well, I've made my peace, and you better
there you
do
go.
Better next time.
You said your piece, and if I want to get it right, I better do what you think. Okay, that's okay. That's
right.
Good. I'm hearing you.
Right.
I'm hearing what you're yeah. saying. I may not
okay.
be buying it and taking it home in my shopping bag, but I'm hearing it.
Okay, good.
That was a good one, though. That's a good one, though. I should have done this way and that way. Okay. And, you know, if I served somebody food and cleaned up after them and they wanted to thank me, I would say, well, you're very welcome and deserving. You might have heard me say that phrase once or twice.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So when people thank me and I think it's on the mark, that's my response. I say, you're very welcome and deserving. And when there's a different point to be made, I will go ahead and try and make it. That's all I'm saying. Right? I'm just, it's like, what's another analogy? You know, like, so if it's almost, to me, my mind is racing trying to come up with a better analogy, and there isn't one there, but I think in terms of it's elevating movie stars over teachers. Right? I mean, I just think that's just plain silly, right? Because the teacher has so much more value. And the movie star, okay, there's entertainment, there's value in our culture to the arts, et cetera, absolutely. But the way we overvalue that compared to the people that, you know, teach our children and really do the grunt work, it's kind of lopsided. And that's the point I was trying to make. If right after that, you know, if you had come out of the gate and said, wow, I just have to say what the work Celinda did was just amazing. And it's just, I'm so grateful. It opened up space for me. I felt like with her courage that if you had said that and then you had said, and I think you did a very nice job, you know, helping her stay on track, I would have been, you're very welcome and deserving. Thank you for that. You're welcome and deserving. The point I was trying to make is put the spotlight on the core of this work that does the work. That's all. That's all. I'm going to give you a chance to hit a response before I open up the microphone for Magda.
Well, I thought I had done that. Obviously, I did not. I mean, you said, anybody got any thoughts about what Celinda did? And I remember calling in and saying, amazing, that was amazing. I also want to say your work was good, too. Bingo. You got all bent out of shape.
No, I wasn't bent out of shape at all. I just wanted to make the point. I was very relaxed about it and just trying to be very, very clear. So Susan is gone, and here is Magda. Welcome.
Well, hi there. Thank you. I have been laughing out loud for minutes and minutes now, listening to the two of you. It's been quite a lovely comedy. And I understand, Susan, your point of view very much. And I hopefully understand yours, Dr. Kim. I agree with you that it's really important because of the position that you're in, hosting this show and endeavoring to teach the tools themselves, and especially the wake-up sheet, the forgiveness sheet, that is really where the guidance is, and it's the person themselves that does the real work. And, you know, totally agree with that. And I think it is important to highlight that because that's what this show is about. And two, about the facilitator. And I think in hindsight, I was impressed with what was going on in that show between you and Celinda. I was impressed at that time. I'm still impressed. I thought your guidance was absolutely on point, totally gorgeous. And that's not to take away anyone else's ability to guide someone through the forgiveness sheet, because I've been brilliant sometimes too. I just appreciate, and I'm sure Susan has, you know, I appreciate what you did that day. And I must say that, you know, you just said a little while ago, all you have to do is remember to tell people to soften and this and that and that. I never remember to tell people to soften. So I just wanted to add that. I see both points, and I have a feeling, Susan, if you're still there, do you get it now? Do you understand?
Yeah,
Dr. Jim's
I get it.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I get it. I will be very careful what I say next time, though, because sometimes I get into trouble. I mean, I understand what you're saying, Dr. Tim, but fooey on it. I still say you could have been nicer about accepting a compliment.
Or, Dr. Tim, did you feel like you were being put on a pedestal?
I wish the two of you could understand how thoroughly I enjoy your input and appreciate your participation in this work, and that if there's anything that comes out of my mouth that strikes you as criticism or put down, it was never intended that way as it was leaving my mind and my mouth. So that's the first thing I want to say.
Got it.
And I can't regulate how it lands for you. I'm grateful, Susan, when you come back and say that you think I could have been more this and that, and that you felt like you'd been slapped down or whatever. I'm grateful for that feedback, so I can, you know, modify it a little bit. Maybe I'll work a little harder to try and, you know, pre-program what comes out of me to try and be even more gentle. And to try and make sure that before I say anything that might be interpreted as a negative thing, that first I say how much I appreciate you and your input on the show and the fact that you keep calling. Because that's the core of what I want to put out there. And then, at a certain level, when people like Magda and Susan and Belinda and some other people have called for a regular over time at a regular level, I kind of let my guard down, and I don't think so much about, you know, somebody's fragile ego. I think about in terms of, oh, here's a key point I want to make about this work, right?
Yeah.
And so if I do that and it seems to you like dismissive to you or your personality, I offer my apologies in advance, and I'll apologize after the fact if it happens. It's not intended, as it's leaving my mouth, to be anything but a clarification about a point for the work. And all of it, I want to base it on multiple overt statements. And I think I've made many over the years, both in emails and on the air, of my appreciation for your participation, for your intelligent questions, for your willingness to do your own work. And I would like you both, Susan and Magda and anybody else, Celinda, all these regular callers, to have that as a fundamental understanding. And I'll, you know, accept the feedback and work a little bit harder to make sure I don't trample somebody's feelings when they're offering a compliment.
All right.
This could go on for a while, but I'll accept that and let it rest.
I'm laughing again. Oh. Okay. Well,
because I don't want
so,
you to
so
have
Susan,
to tiptoe
Susan,
around,
you,
Dr. Tim.
So Susan,
don't
you want to just send me your address in an email, and I can get the flowers sent out Do you want sweets with it too? Does it have to be a big bouquet, or can it just be a little corsage? What?
You're being bad, Dr. Tim. Bad.
What form does the apology have to take so it doesn't have to go on for a long while?
It doesn't have to go on for a long time. But I feel as if there's something still missing, but I'll just let it be missing. I do have a darn fragile ego, and so that hits a tender spot. It's true. You have to be nice. You have to be nice.
Or else.
Okay.
I did some good work on it, Dr. Tim. It was not all lost, believe me, but it was a mess. It was a friendly mess, but I mean, I did do a wake-up sheet on that whole interaction. I thought, okay, I don't know who's doing what here, but this is my part, and there was a good deal of garbage there to look at.
Okay.
Well, and it reminds me of the time that you were just so, and for years I didn't realize how disruptive it was for you, but you said something about, you know, you would give me a hug, and I said, oh, that's great to have those feelings, and think about how much better your life will be when you feel that way towards everyone you see. And years later, I found out you took that as me saying, I don't want a hug from you. And
yeah,
and so,
I took it as you saying, yuck, oh, gross.
Yeah, well, that wasn't anything like what was intended. So, but that's what this reminds me of is you know, when coming out of the gates, I just wanted to say, you know, that work that Celinda did was phenomenal, and it happened because of her willingness, and it had, you know, the facilitator who stays to the core of this work could have been in wide rotation for that. And I just want to highlight that's one of the best parts about this work is that it is the kind of thing you can just download the worksheet or download the app and start getting good results. When you train yourself to cancel the need to be right, to return to a loving state, to be honest about whatever's coming up and just accept it. And so that was the point I was trying to make.
You made it.
All righty. Well, in the middle of this, Celinda has raised her hand, but we're out of time, so I will let Jeannie work on that. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. Thank you, Magda. Thank you again, Susan. I will mute you so you can listen to the second hour, and I'll turn on the microphone for and welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Good conversation between the three of you.
Oh, well, you know, you missed the knockdown drag-out part of it. But anyway, have a great show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Tuesday, April the 9th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in, and starting on Podbean, we've had some good interactions there as well as on Blog Talk. And so we're being able to reach people who can't dial in. And so we're glad that we have both options. So anyway, we'll give Michael a moment to dial. And I'll just say, Susan, since you're on here, she's there. I got an email from someone. Actually, it was not an email. It was through the app. And they said that they didn't have a question, but they had a comment. And they were talking about being with their child yesterday, looking at the eclipse, which they didn't get to see much of because it was cloudy. But and I'm looking for the email. Here it is. And she said she went out, her son gave up and went in to get a snack, and so she said she was standing out there alone, staring at the sun, and I felt called to remove my shoes and lay down in the grass and just watch the sky. I found serenity and began canceling goals and talking with Rukka. What a beautiful time. Michael's words took me back to that space this morning. She was re-listening on Spotify to yesterday's show. And she said, I am thankful for the perspectives of parents who are further along in their parenthood journey yesterday. I get excited when I hear you say area code 610 because I benefit so much from Susan's questions and comments. Thanks for all you do. So I thought I would just pass that on to you that
Thank you.
So she must be in your 610 area code as well. And she said every time she hears that, she just smiles and that she just loves to hear your comments and your questions. So thank you for being part of that.
Oh, that's so nice. And she didn't give a name, huh? I'd like to call her up and thank her.
Yeah, she did. Her name's Kimberly. So I'll send her back a text and see if I can get her contact information, and I'll give it to you.
Okay, I don't know.
And/or you could pass Susan's number on to her, and maybe you guys could communicate.
Okay.
She might enjoy joining your support group, Susan.
That's great. Sure, because I don't know who she is. Yeah. All right. Well.
Well, and so many times you've heard me say how much I appreciate your questioning mind and your process because you open the space for everybody, and here's somebody who's out there just offering the feedback. So. Thank you for what you do and your work and your relentlessness.
You're very welcome. It is relentless. Yeah. So thanks. No, it's been just, I was thinking about how I forget how I came across you and Dr. Tim, who were running a one-hour show. And it was well before the pandemic. Maybe a year
before.
That was
way back, yes.
Yeah. Yep. I remember Jeannie saying, as soon as I called in and was allowed to say something, I began doing what I do now, is talking a heck of a lot more than everybody else and feeling, dealing with feeling like a hog and a pig, but I was getting so much fun.
Cancel that thought.
And, well, it's just one of those things.
What power person gave you that message?
When you have five kids and not much money, it's easy to be a hog at the dinner table. So, yeah. You pig, you took the extra potato or the last potato or the first potato. Anyway, yeah.
Sounds
it's an old
like
thing.
A worksheet. Yeah, sounds like a worksheet or two.
But I remember Jeannie said that somebody said, who is this Susan with 610? Who is this who keeps calling in? And I wish I knew who told me about you or how I found you. It's like hitting the jackpot. And then when the COVID came along and so many things that we were involved in were canceled, I just would, I'd get up really early. So by noon, I'm ready to put my feet up somewhere and just be fed. And so, gosh, this was like the support system of the epoch. I mean, to have, just to be able to settle in and have no obligations and learn what you're teaching. It's been great. So,
well, we're glad
anyway.
That you dine here, and we're glad that you help prepare the meals. Thank you.
Oh, okay. You're welcome. Anytime. Oh, boy.
Good metaphor.
I tell you.
So how do you be today? What's exciting in your world? What's on your plate? Anything to share? Or?
Well, always, you know that. I had two wonderful little experiences yesterday and today. My son is in such a hard place right now. And one of the things he asked me, because he's trying to fix up this boat, is if I could take a piece of canvas, a big piece of canvas, to a tailor that neither of us knew. We just saw that his tailor shop is nearby. Could I take it over to him and see if he would repair a big rip
like Paul, the tent maker. I wanted to call on Paul.
Right.
So I put it in the car and drove over, and this tall, absolutely amazing looking, he looked like a Native American with braids. He was wearing a Christian cross, so that was a mix-up in a way, but he answers the door, and he doesn't speak English. So I whip out my Google Translate, greatest thing ever, and tell him what
right.
we need in Spanish. And he speaks in Spanish, and it gets translated into English. And we had a perfectly reasonable conversation, and I spread out the sail. It was a piece of sail. And he's going over it, and he understood what to do, and he took it. And I called Jonathan, and Jonathan speaks quite good Spanish. So Jonathan, he talked. Jonathan was thrilled that this was in the works. And the interaction with this man was like a piece of heaven. He's from Ecuador. And I didn't get the details of his life. But here he is. He runs a little tailor shop in our neighborhood. And I felt as if my heart was just torn wide open. There was such sweetness just in the business transaction. And so that I have nothing to say about it except that when we're worried about the well-being of the planet, climate change, our government, all that stuff, the local gorgeousness is just still there. And then today, mm-hmm. another little testimonial. I was walking this brand new dog who's needing training desperately, and I'm trying to train her up. And this man, a rickety-looking 60- or 70-year-old man with bull legs and overweight, huffing and puffing, he's running. And I stop, and he says, I said, I admire you for running. I don't do that anymore. And he said, I am running after 8 weeks of being flat on my back with a back injury. And I made myself get up today. And I'm running. And I said, God, that's fabulous. Carry on. And he said, you've just inspired me to finish my run. Anyway, it was just another little moment there. And these things are happening. They're like little gifts that are coming along even when things are pretty hard to take sometimes around here. So that's a testimonial. And then I had the guts to bawl out Dr. Tim for not being more gracious about my compliment about facilitating Celinda's beautiful wake-up sheet. And we had a kind of a fight.
Oh, really?
A fight.
Did you have to do a worksheet?
Well, I had done one, and I came out thinking, you know, I do have some garbage here, but he has some garbage, too. So I informed him about his garbage. Anyway, it's been quite a day.
What fun.
Yep.
Yeah, I did some work. We're opening another little garden space. We're starting to build some soil. I worked on that yesterday morning, and it's right on the front of our property. And the city comes around and picks up, refuse from the yard and trash and those sorts of things with a big hook, aside from the garbage collection. And this, I just did this yesterday when we spent hours on it, hauling stuff and getting this all, set up. And this guy came along and used his big set of, jaws to tear it up like he was going to take it away for us. And fortunately, he stopped up the street. I think he stopped to have a cigarette. So I walked, up the hill and caught up with him. And he was just so gracious, just like you're saying, just human beings, how awesome they are. And the garbage man was just so gracious and so, I didn't know. I thought you needed to take it away. And, it was just a sweet interaction. And, we are blessed by having those all around us. And if our minds are blocked with hostility and fear, sometimes those things are hard to see. So it is nice to be able to see that, capture that, and have those kinds of interactions. and bless those who are carrying so much trauma that it seems an impossibility for them to see that in their neighbors. So breathing with you. Any other thoughts for you today? Are you still with us, Susan?
Hi,
Miss Jeannie,
I am.
Are you there? Oh, good. Okay.
I'm there, Michael. I have these very sensitive hearing aids, and if I touch them, they hang up. So I got right back on, and I heard what you were saying for the most part. But I had to press one again and be let back in. But, yeah, I know. Yes.
Awesome.
I learned about a woman today from Venezuela. This is one of the problems with our immigration policy. She was led into this country, got as far as our refugee center, but tells us that she can't get legalization papers and permission to work till 2029. So what she's doing...
Crazy, isn't it?
She's begging people, can I sleep on your couch tonight? She's homeless. And what do you do? I mean, my church is like this... The woman who is our administrator is an angel, an absolute angel. She's Spanish-speaking. She's from Venezuela. So she was telling me about this woman and how much it hurts her to see one of her fellow countrymen come all the way up here and not be able to be productive or lead even a life of dignity. She's just begging.
Yeah.
And
it
is crazy. Anyway, that's just the other side of it. When you mentioned people who are so traumatized, these people somehow still, they're down there accepting a cup of coffee and some fruit, and they're thanking us, and they're offering to help. And I'm thinking they are so traumatized, but they retain some kind of amazing humanity in spite of it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah,
so,
and it's so
anyway,
crazy that there, you know, the whole immigration system, I've spent quite a bit of time looking at, has been broken for a long, long, long time. And actually, quite a wonderful, from what I can understand, Republican man really had negotiated and set up and had resolution to a lot of those things. For instance, that woman would have been able to come under the circumstances she came, and within a matter of weeks or a couple of months would have known whether she had her status or didn't, and that would be such a deterrent, I mean, such an assist to those who are truly in need, and such a deterrent to those who aren't, who are just coming, well, you know, I can get into the country and I can spend 7 or 8 or 9 years there and nobody's going to bother me, so, you know, I'll just go ahead. That was fixed, and then the whole thing was just blown up because of politics. It's just, you know, the whole game is just so crazy.
It is.
So crazy. And the need, you know, the immigration system, the way it was originally set up, every president has had the ability to, you know, make exceptions to accommodate people who are truly in need. And with COVID and with the poverty and the new level of drug abuse, in many cases initiated, started, and in demand created by the pharmaceutical industry, you know, there has been, yes, a massive influx because there's been a massive amount of trauma going on. And third world countries that have been raped by... In many cases, sadly, American businesses have created the conditions, and now it's like, no, let's just call them the bad guys. It's like, I think we need to start listening to the scriptural advice that told us, you know. In fact, I actually just posted a thing earlier today that someone had posted a quote from Leviticus. And if a man from another country is living in your land with you, do not make life hard for him. Let him be to you as one of your countrymen and have love for him as for yourself.
I love it.
It's like, what happened? What happened?
Yeah.
And it's time to hold rage accountable. You know, it's nice, and I certainly extend love in the direction of some of the people who are perpetrating this insanity, because the pain in their minds, the pain in their bodies has got to be horrendous. But
yeah.
At the same time, there needs to be accountability for what's being done.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it's pretty tragic. So
yeah.
Definitely joining with you in holding a space for that immigrant population, not only here, but all over the world, the kind
right.
of trauma that has created the war and such, has created so much need for people to, or so much tragedy that people have to leave their homes behind and leave everything they have. It's just, it's like, what a travesty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So joining you in holding the space for healing around that one.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Well, carry on.
Dear heart.
I'll be listening.
All right. Have a blessed one. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
All right, Miss Jeannie. How are you, dear heart?
I am good, and it's all quiet on this end. And Joanna's in the chat room, and it looks like she had a conversation with Tim. Please let me know if any of that has not been addressed, and I'll be glad to read it to Michael. And there are no other hands up.
Okay, cool. Well, there are a couple things that I want to we're working with the dictionary in the Enlightenment book. And on page 75 up toward the top, I want to add some to the a different twist, a different mindset to that, even from this translation, the third word from the top, dhyana. And what was established by the translators who did this as a first century understanding of these words gives us a clue, but it's really only a hint toward the truth of it. And what it speaks of, dhyana, is the name for a judge. And in that Aramaic system, the sole function of the judge is to fix an appropriate sentence. No judgment of innocence was possible. Hence, punishment is implied, guilt having already been established at a public trial. And just to kind of, again, working to get closer to that Aramaic mindset so we have the eyes to see and the ears to hear what's really going on there. You know, this idea of guilt as opposed to responsibility in this culture is so widespread that when it comes to law, and remember that in Aramaic, the word law simply means the way it works rather than the rule of a superior, and therefore it's not something that can be broken. The way it works is what people are always doing. You know, people who live in drama and trauma know exactly how it works, and they're living a life according to law, the laws of drama and trauma, and they get lots of it. There are laws, there are the way it works to have a human life, to live as love, and people are doing that or getting a result. It's just a result. It's accountability. It's responsibility opposed to guilt. And so in this case, the idea of the judge, you know, life is, in the context of this Aramaic definition, life is the judge. When they said judgment day is at hand, and, you know, it's interesting, this man Yeshua, they tried to get him to judge. They tried to. And his only phrase back was, neither do I condemn thee. But isn't it interesting that there are those with their rageful, judging minds who say, and then on the last day, he's going to come back and do what he wouldn't do when he was here. It's just like, no. It's not some big punishing judgment day where he's going to come and, no, that's not it. Judgment day is at hand. If life delivers to you trauma today, that will be your judgment. That will be the result. That will be your accountability for what you as a creator have created. So, you know, I would substitute in this definition for dhyana, again, we're on page 75 of the course, I would substitute this, the word sentence, the word result. So, you know, law brings results. We turn it into judgment, but it's really result and accountability for what we've engaged in. And that's why in this particular definition, you know, it's like the law, the energetic dynamics, the way it works, if you've created a certain result, can't step up and say, oh, you don't deserve this result, you're innocent or you're guilty. It's a whole different thing. It's just understanding how this energy field works. And yes, they were true on this one. Judgment day, result day is at hand. You know, they said to Yeshua, how do we tell where somebody's at? He said, by their fruit, by the results, by what happens on their judgment day. So it's a whole different context, a whole different way of thinking than our system of thought, the degraded system of thought that we've come to. You know, in Aramaic, cause and effect are one. You can't separate the two. There isn't cause over here and effect over here. You can't engage in a cause and not get the effect. And for me, this word dhyana implies that, to fix an appropriate result. And the word sentence is used because, of course, Dan was a lawyer and he was directing the project. And so to think in terms of this Western culture's, you know, judgment system and the game of guilt and innocence. But in Aramaic, one would think more in terms of what's the result you've got. So rather than, oh, I see you've got a terrible result, then you must be guilty. If you remember back to some of the earlier lessons we've done from the Aramaic, you'll recall that we've spoken of idea that the energy system is automatic in how it produces because we're creators, a creative result in our lives. What's the fruit of our thinking? You know, you go to that passage, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh, the opening words in the book of John. That would, you could draw a circle around both ends of that equation, cause and effect, mind energy, flesh. And if you engage in the mind energy, then the result, the experience in the so-called chemical system of our bodies becomes the expressed result or the judgment, the sentence, as this is talking of. But it's not implying, or my take is it's in such a different realm than we've been trained to think, and that's what we're looking to try to do, is to build the brain cells to have neural structures that empower us to think, to conceive, to comprehend in the way that the Aramaic mind would think, comprehend, and see things. And that way we can get closer and closer to the fact of what Yeshua was speaking of. And so it goes through several different statements of sentence, what's pronounced, their own condemners, the results. People are their own condemners. They create the results that they get. So it's a different shade of meaning than our legalistic thinking system has presented to us. And then if we go to this, we talked about this the other day, but it occurs that this one deserves another perusal. Devani, about a little more than halfway down the page. And I bring this one out because someone had sent us a link to a presentation that somebody did on the eclipse. And recognizing how the fear and hostility-based mind works. It was interesting. This person presented this whole thing about how, well, you know, the sun is there, and when the moon covers and it gets dark, it opens a place for demons to come, and noon, and noon. And I was just like, excuse me. Two heavenly bodies cross each other from our perspective, and we call it an eclipse. Probably today, there'll be a million or more eclipses throughout the known and the unknown universe. But minds brainwashed in fear and hostility can use such an event to turn the fact that the paths cross of two bodies and make it mean something that reinforces the whole idea of fear. And so this particular person was talking about, yeah, this is going to let demons into the earth. Be vigilant, be careful. So I want to look at this idea once again of demon or devan. The carnate, finite entity representing an evil idea created by man. We can create energies that appear to physically attack us, but these are made of mind energy. You know, it's the core of this idea, this whole concept is idea. It's mind energy that we're talking about. And when you recognize what Yeshua was giving us in that regard, to make sure that the mind energy that we engage in comes not from the past, not from the filters of fear or hostility, but to discipline ourselves. So anything that comes from hostility or fear, we recognize as corrupt data and dissolve it through forgiveness rather than buying it. Recognizing, you know, this part of this person's presentation was about, well, darkness. As though darkness had a power and a presence. And the thing about darkness is that darkness is an absence. You'll notice that nobody's ever invented a flash dark. You know, a little thing where you turn the switch on and it puts the lights out because it's a flash dark? Light is a presence. Darkness is an absence. And so the idea of a demon in Aramaic, you know, he cast out demon. What were they? Evil ideas created by men. And how do you countenance an evil idea? What does that word mean? Well, remember that sin is an archery term. When you fired at the target, you missed the bullseye. The scorekeeper yelled sin, which simply meant you missed the bullseye. If you fired at the bullseye and you missed the target altogether, the scorekeeper would yell evil, like you missed the target altogether. And so put that in the context of a positive creation based in love, and this evil idea, this evil finite, what word should I use? Gathering of mind energy, of energetic dynamics of mind that are in conflict with divine design, in conflict with the presence of love. This is evil. This is the demon that people are, you know, they've personalized it and made it some power outside themselves. So the evil entity, it is an entity of mind that we're talking about here. Not some kind of creature. So when this structure of mind becomes complex enough and deeply enough embedded in a human mind, then it goes on to say that it is capable of fixing or settling into a mind so firmly that it controls, in whole or part, attitudes, words, behavior, and judgment. So someone who's possessed by a demon does not have some sort of a creature with talons and tongs and sharp teeth attached to it. It has a complex of mind energy that feel like talons and tongs and sharp teeth. And when one begins to forgive, literally face those energies that, you know, the Greeks turned into the demonic world that's out to get us. And you remember Yeshua talked about fear. Perfect love, the active presence of love in your mind, casts out fear. He spoke of fear as exactly what it is, as a demon. An entity of mind, not an entity of bodies. People run around, they got these Greek pictures of all these horrific. And yes, people see them. No question. I can put you into a somnambulistic state of hypnosis, give me about 5 minutes, and I can have you seeing anything we want you to see. I can have you touching something that you'll swear is something other than what it is you're actually touching. I can have you seeing around you. I can have you standing on a floor and believing that you're on the bow of a ship, and you'll feel the swaying of the ship in your body. That's how deeply controlling these entities of mind are. And when the ancients said transcend, they were saying put an end to the state of trance. If you are entranced by fear, you've got to put an end to it, because you will continuously create results. Your judgment day will be the result that you've created with this entity of mind. And when you are constantly on guard and in forgiveness, then any slight twitch of a demon, an entity that conflicts, an entity of mind, a piece of mind energy that conflicts with the presence of love and the divine design. If you can get mass hypnosis, if you can get millions of people believing in some evil force, they will manifest energetically that evil force. But let's look at the Aramaic again. A finite entity representing an evil idea created by man, an idea which is in conflict with divine design. And yes, it will control attitude towards behavior, judgment, and we could add to that perception. And this man Yeshua knew exactly how to cast out demons. Exactly how to break down the entities of mind that attack us. The fear, the sadness, the grief, the rage, the hatred, the vengeance. And if we're constantly on guard, and when things surface, I shouldn't use that word guard, because that implies fear perhaps, but constantly vigilant. You know, being the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions, and watching the movement of energy in our own minds. And if it does not support the active presence of love, the fact of your human life, then apply forgiveness to it. And that, when you first start doing that, might mean you have to do it 20 times a minute. In order to free yourself of the generational influences of these entities of mind that control your attitudes, your words, your behavior, your judgment, and your perception. So lest we buy into the Greek idea and substitute the Aramaic thinking about demons, recognize they're talking about entities of mind. We're not casting out creatures. Even though one can create a visual picture. Remember, the mind has the ability to convert digital information to pictures. You know, your TV set has this amazing ability. A signal comes in through your antenna. You can look inside that wire. You will not find a picture. TV set converts that information into a picture on the screen. The human mind has exactly the same capacity. It turns mind energy into pictures. So yes, we'll see the product of our imagination. And an imagination run wild. Imagination is one of our spiritual faculties. It's the ability to image information and energies into our structure. And it's meant to be guided and function to incarnate, to embody the truth of who we are as human beings, the active presence of love. And so that's what we're here to really understand and bring forward. And so if we proceed on page one, let me just check, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room before we move forward?
Joan had asked cause and effect in a question mark.
Yes.
And Rex has his hand up.
Okay. So cause and effect, let's just throw that idea forward. Cause and effect, engage in mind energy becomes flesh. So if I'm looking, you know, I've used the example before on the show of, I have a silver dollar here, and on one side is the head of George Washington, and on the other side of it is the Statue of Liberty. And somebody looks at the coin, and they say, and I show them the head of the coin, and I say, what do you see? And they say, George Washington. And I turn it over, and I say, what do you see? Oh, I see the Statue of Liberty. Well, actually, what you see is a coin, and there are two sides to the coin. But is there a point at which I can take the head off of that coin so that there's only a tail? No. They are one entity, and I can't, at any point, I can't take the tail off the head or the head off the tail, or it ceases to be a coin. So the object is a coin, and two perspectives make it appear like there's a George Washington and a Statue of Liberty. In exactly the same way, we see cause and effect. We see what we call a body, and we see what we call a mind, and we say, oh, mind is one thing, and body is another. Well, that's like saying George Washington is one thing and the Statue of Liberty is another on the coin. No, they're not. They're different perspectives of the same object. And so what was understood in the Aramaic is when you engaged in a cause, mind energy, it produced literally in physiology chemistry. And you know the mechanism of that is now known. If we look at the work of let's see, there's a video online with a cell biologist, Bruce Lipton. And what Bruce has shown in the lab is that when you think a thought, supposedly non-physical, that thought literally becomes a molecule in the body. The molecule circulates around in the structure until it finds a cell where the receptor site that matches. The molecule lands on the receptor site, and if you were inside of the cell when that molecule lands on the receptor site, what you would see as the thought, as the mind energy, as that neuropeptide lands on the receptor site, is that it, through the receptor site, inserts itself in the cell, and what we would see coming into the cell is what we call chemistry. And so if I'm looking from inside the cell, I say, oh, chemistry. If I look from outside the cell, I go, oh, thought. That's like George Washington and the Statue of Liberty. They're opposite ends of the same thing, or pardon me, opposite perspectives on one single event. So in Aramaic, that was understood. Cause and effect were one. You know, we live in a culture that has people think, oh, I can do a cause and get away with it by not experiencing the effect. The Aramaic mind knew better. If you engage in the cause, you're going to have the result. That's all. They are one. They are singular. You can't, you know, that old song, you can't have one without the other. Well, that would be cause and effect. Cool. Well, let's say hello to Rex and see how the young man is doing. After his travels all the way from Bristol, Virginia, back to Lansing, Michigan. Hey, Rex.
That was quite a run. Hi, Michael. Hi, Janie. Hi, everyone. Great
Welcome.
Conversation. Yeah, really enjoying it. I'm doing well. It's a ongoing process of integration. You know, I'm
yes
more and more feeling grounded. Sending happy Thanksgiving and happy Easter messages. I sent a message to Jimmy this morning that I had meant to send. Anyway, it was a joke. But, yeah, spacey, but doing well, grounded more all the time. But I'm enjoying the conversation, and I have thought slash kind of a question, but I think it's more of just sharing a thought briefly. I have had, most people probably know, but if they don't, my son had got beat up, and my son Journey got beat up, and then he had he went through a mental health crisis for about 4 years. He's in the house, in and out of a mental health institutes. They aren't mental health institutes,
right.
They're mental institutions,
yeah.
And you know, disease institutions, and they, and to no avail, he didn't recover, and he ended up stepping off of a six-story building and died. You know, he was trying to fly
right.
And land on his feet. So I just. So I have experiences of him where in the past I would actually see Journey and he would talk to me and then I would communicate with him. Well, I've also had experiences where I would see, and I'm putting the see in parentheses as per this discussion.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I
yep.
would see, or in quotation, excuse me, I would see the angels. Well, then as I learn more and became more aware, I started to realize I wasn't seeing what was there. I was seeing what I made it be. I was seeing what I had a relationship with in my evidential mind. And
right.
What I've come to understand, I had an experience with Journey while we were doing our work this last few days. And, I knew when I saw, quote, saw Journey, I was seeing an image that I was projecting onto the vibration and the frequencies that I identified as Journey as his
right.
father. And so as you were sharing this about the demons, and that's I'm right on board with you 100%, and I love the Aramaic way of perceiving it and the way they teach and the way that understanding is, that here's the kind of the question part of it is that when
okay.
if I really had a vested interest in what I was quote seeing, then I would get into an argument with someone if they tried to convince me that I wasn't seeing it, right?
Right.
And if I put enough time and energy into that apparent perception called seeing of Journey or a demon or whatever it is I might make it, and there's a bunch of us that are joining in on that. I'm not encouraging anyone to do that, but let's say a bunch of us, if this has happened in history and time, at what point does it become where the mind energy becomes matter, like you've described? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh, and the flesh dwelt amongst us. So could you speak to that partially about, or fully about that, the demon part? And so I'd just like to hear more about what you have to say about that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think I've got it.
Okay, cool.
Sort of. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. So
yeah.
My take would be, you know, let's put Einstein's quotation in there to sit on top of this conversation, where he says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So Einstein's saying is, there is no material world. There is no, you know, the scriptures talk about a world of flesh, but there truly, there is only energy. There, people talk about physical and metaphysical like there's some other realm or something. But when we're talking about that, in truth, what we're simply talking about is a different frequency level. You know,
yeah.
The signal coming into the antenna is in a certain frequency range. And, you know, right now, gee, I'm sitting in my room and there are probably 1,000 different visual signals going through my room right now, but I'm not seeing any of them. And there are probably another 1,000 in your room right now and you're not seeing any. Why? Because we don't have the converter for them. And our minds, when we make things appear solid, when perception generates an image, and we look at that image, seldom do we realize that it's painted on the inside of our eyeballs, and nothing in the world is as we, with our brains, formulate a visual image. There are enough reference points that we don't bump into the table, but if I could alter the rate of vibration at which my eye looks at the table or your so-called body, I would see this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. I wouldn't see a body, and I wouldn't see a table.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of get icons. You know, there's one scientist that did a whole thing, and he used a comparison of, you know, a desktop on a computer. You know, I have a file on my computer that says email, and there's this little yellow file. Well, there's nothing in my computer that is yellow and looks like a file folder. So there's nothing true about that file folder. However, I still treat it with respect because if I go, oh, well, that file folder isn't real, I'm going to just drop it into the trash and delete it, I just lost all my emails. The file folder on my desktop is a symbol for electrons, protons, neutrons flowing inside of my computer that when I know how to operate that visual icon, I can get to look and read something that Rex wrote to me. But there are no words of Rex in my computer. That's all. They're all symbols. And so our mind is like that. We get all of these symbols. And, you know, people say, well, if there's no such thing as a body, what does it matter? Why don't I just go out and kill people or whatever? Well, there's no such thing as a file folder in your computer, but you respect the symbol that it is for what it does for you. And if you don't respect it and you throw it away, you just lost all your email. In the same way, our mind presents symbols, and then we put words to the symbols. And, of course, the Miracles talks about you live by symbols for everything you've created a name. And now that you've got a name for the symbol, you now are twice removed from the truth of the thing. There's an experience. My brain creates a visual picture that makes sense to me. It's an icon on my desktop that makes sense to me. My picture of Rex doesn't describe Rex in any way, shape, or form, but it gives me something I can work with that I call Rex, and we create interactions. I respect the symbol in my mind because, like the icon on my desktop, it's useful, but I know that that's not the truth of who Rex is. And while I respect it, I move to a different place and start to see that that's my brain's symbol. And let's say Rex, I interact with Rex and pain comes up in me. Yes, you would say to me, Michael, you must forgive from your unconscious that pain that Rex just resonated in you that shows up as a symbol in your mind of belonging to Rex because you're the one that's feeling it. It's inside of you. And so we have useful icons an event happens, Rex, and so my brain has an image that I call Rex. You know, I know what your face looks like, da-da-da-da-da. And then I have a name for you, and when I think that your name, I'm two generations from the truth of who you are. If I think that you're your body, I'm one generation from who you are. And when we, to me, one of the objectives is to get by the tricks and the errors of the symbolic world and to step into the truth of who we are and interaction and beyond the desktop into real interaction as human beings. And that's where the direct experience of active present love becomes the guiding force. Does that fit? Does that make sense with where you were going?
Yeah, it's right on. I postulated and played around with this a lot, and we've talked about it at times. But it adds so much a depth of understanding for me. I mean, I remember in the course in the activities was this. Okay, now look at an object and then state, I don't see this object. You know, and this object is not what
I've given it all the meaning it has for me.
I've given all the meaning, exactly. And I chuckle because, and this lends to this last piece I wanted to share. When Journey was really young, he and Mitzi and Brea were playing. We were at a workshop, and they were playing in the hotel, and they had these heavy metal brackets that go around the corners for these marble walls, and it was it's solid stainless steel, thick, heavy, and they were marble walls. So they were playing, and Journey lost his balance when they were running around the corner, and Brea made it around the corner, and Journey lost his balance, and Mitzi was standing right next to him, and she watched, and he went right through the wall. I know this sounds really weird, but it's perfect for the conversation we're having. He literally, his head, she saw it, and she really had to question what she saw because it didn't make sense. Because the angle through which he went, he couldn't have gone around it. He didn't go around it. And this is what she and Brea and Journey all witnessed. He went through it, and then he got on the other side of it, and Brea's eyes got really big, and Mitzi went, "What?" And then Journey just looked. He looked at the wall. He looked back at Mitzi, smiled, and ran on playing. And another occasion, Mitzi was in a car driving and had a friend in the car. And a car just literally was right next to her, just moved right over into her car, but it didn't hit it. But literally the car had to go through her fender. This is apparent, right? I mean, this is all perceptual. I mean, experiential. And I think it lends to what we're talking about, how much of what, you know, we, like you said, the table, we have a mutual understanding and agreement that what we're witnessing is a table. So how much of that solidification is there based on the perception and the projection versus what is actually there? And I think you said, and I wanted to share those two experiences and there's been lots of others, but none so profound as those two, is directly relating to what we're talking about. So that was very good.
Well, and in physics, you recognize what's called the observer effect, and that the object, whatever it is impacted and changed by the observer. And that in this energetic world, our perceptions are set up an energy field that support certain happenings in the world. And when we choose to forgive those things from our heart, from our own unconscious, we stop energetically supporting the existence of whatever that particular expression is in the world. And to me, that's one of the reasons for being willing to face every bit of hostility and fear and recognize that this expression was made for a space where the active presence of love is the governing energy that literally creates the world of matter, what we call matter, the energy level that we call matter. And as we learn to weaken or forgive the constructs, especially the generational constructs of our minds that are based in hostility or fear, we change our physiology because of the energetic dynamic that we shift within ourselves, and we literally change what we support energetically in the world. And when Yeshua talked about, you know, a little leavening leavens a whole loaf, he wasn't talking about bread. He was talking about critical mass in physics. And when enough people are, instead of living from the brainwash of hostility, fear, pain, drama, trauma, power person dynamics, and live from being, then when enough people do that, then there is an energetic shift, which would be comparable to changing channels on the TV. You know, gee, I got this little controller and I push a button and I'm watching a football game. I push a button and I'm watching a symphony. If that's how the energy world works, then what happens when 7.5 billion people wake up one morning experiencing themselves as the active presence of love and experiencing those around them rather than out of the energy patterns resonating in them from the past, out of that active present love that we are, then energetically the whole game shifts. And to me, that's the whole objective of this work.
Well, Michael, one other thing real quick. I had an experience while we were working together of remembering the story you have shared. I don't know if you ever shared it with the group in this program, but of you coming upon an accident where a young man, flew in the air off his motorcycle.
And, in Montreal?
You were the first to him. And you, as I recall, you didn't accept that he was, because he landed on his head, evidently, and you didn't accept that he was damaged.
Actually, what he did was he flew off of his motorcycle and he landed. There was a curb. His back and the lower part of his neck were on the road, and his head was on the curb. I mean, it had to kill him. I mean, the impact of that force.
And as I recall, you showed up and did that. Go ahead. You know the story better than I do, but I'm bringing it up because it's come to me again. It came to me just now again. And I want to say it because I think it's exactly what we're describing and talking about here.
Yeah. Creatorship.
And that, I think, it's a perfect example of if we make a decision, a choice, if we make a choice based in being love, source, then that choice of manifestation must follow. It's the law.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that was a really good example of what we're talking about.
Yeah, and after putting my hands on him, he got up and walked away and was fine. That was one of those I was just a kid back then. It was one of those amazing, amazing moments and it was where I had been engaging in this work but didn't have much of an understanding, but that was one of those experiences that stood out as a highlight. Haven't thought of it in a long time. Thanks for bringing it back to mind.
That's a powerful reminder of how we interplay with actuality and effect.
Yes.
And our cause and effect at the same time.
Yeah. And how long ago was that? Actually, I was up in Montreal at the Olympics. So it was in 1976 at the 23rd Olympiad in Montreal.
Oh, my goodness.
A little while ago.
Yeah, I'm glad it came to me again because I meant to mention it before when we were together. But, yeah, wonderful.
Cool.
Thank you, Mike. Great, Michael,
awesome.
Great program. Appreciate it.
All right, young man. Quick question. We're out of time, but just a quick question. Yesterday you had said you were noticing some significant shifts in your short-term memory. How is that? How are you experiencing that getting back home?
It appears to be I'm gaining momentum with it. I'm noticing a lot of subtle and some drastic changes, but improving. Yeah, I'm seeing it
awesome.
Changing. I'm going to say changing. How's that? Because improving means that it's better, and that means it was worse. So it's changing in a positive way.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, my friend, you have a blessed one. Thank you, everybody, for joining
Thanks.
Us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.